Welcome. Today, I have the great honor of interviewing Mr. Albert Wong. He was appointed citizenship judge for the Greater Toronto Area in June 2014, and he has over 35 years of service in the Canadian Armed Forces. Over his career, he has served in various public affairs positions with the military across Canada, with the United Nations, and in Afghanistan. As a volunteer, he has made valuable leadership contributions to a number of organizations, including as a chair of the Mississauga Board of Chinese Professionals and Businesses. He is a 2012 recipient of the Chinese Canadian Legend Award. I'd like to take this opportunity to sincerely thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to do this interview today.
Most welcome.
Thank you. I'd like you to begin by discussing the significance and the impact of the work that you do as a citizenship judge for Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada.
Well, my role as a citizenship judge had primarily three functions. The first function that's the most visible and the most public is I get the joy of presiding over citizenship ceremonies, ceremonies where I welcome candidates who have now become new Canadians, and then it's a joyous occasion. The second function I do, and it's just as important but less public, is that I have to hold hearings to determine if an applicant qualifies for citizenship. Now, those who come before me for hearing are a very small percentage of the total number of people who apply for citizenship, but that role, that hearing, is also just as important. And the third function, I have a mandate to go and speak about citizenship, the value of citizenship, and importance of the citizenship program in Canada.
Certainly. And what would you say are some of the most rewarding and challenging aspects associated with the work that you do as a citizenship judge?
Well, the most rewarding is, I get to welcome citizens as new citizens, as I said earlier, but I most enjoy welcoming the children. When I see families and they are there together, and a lot of times mom and dad dress up their kids really well, or they wear their national costumes, and they come to the ceremony, they're all very excited. The kids are a bit bewildered and probably would never remember what happened when they grow up, but they also know this is an important day for their family. This is the day their family becomes Canadian. I take a moment to talk to them about two things. One, I talk to them about the importance of education. Their family, the parents have sacrificed quite a lot to come to a country like Canada, so they have a quality education. The second thing I talk to them about, and I do that on every ceremony and to every kid that I find in the ceremony, I talk to them about the arts. I find that the arts is an important topic to discuss, especially in a ceremony like a citizenship ceremony, because this is a time when they're all together, and the arts is the one venue, a vehicle, where we could blend our cultures together. And arts is also another way for the kids who've come to a new country to be able to express that newness of coming to a country. And so the example I use is, imagine what would happen if a jazz musician from Cuba was to write a new piece of music in the winter in Montreal. I wonder what that music would be like. Or if a young girl from Saudi Arabia was to paint or draw or dance. And a kid who suffered under the Taliban in Afghanistan, for example, who could not have music, becomes a musician. I wonder what type of art would look like, and I would submit to you that's new Canadian art. So that's why I do that. I emphasize that in every ceremony.
And I have to say that as a Polish Canadian, I'm extremely honored to live in Canada. Mm-hmm. We are very multicultural. We are diverse. Mm-hmm. And it's an honor and a privilege to be a part of a country where we are proud of who we are.
We're very fortunate here in Canada. And I see that especially with new Canadians as they come into the ceremony. I think we also have to understand, and maybe we need to reflect as Canadians, why we say we're so fortunate. I think Canada is fortunate because we have a lot of wonderful people who've come from all parts of the world. But we're also fortunate because we have, in one way or the other, agreed that we would live together, work together, and support each other. It's an inclusive society. And one of the things that I do bring up in each ceremony is I talk a bit about the phrase peace, order, and good governance. It's part of our constitution.
Yes.
It is a way that I liken it to, this is how we now, as people living in Canada, have agreed to govern ourselves. We have agreed to arrange our society under peace, under order, and under good governance.
Yes.
And I would think that without one of those three, any one of those three, we then have chaos in our society. And so, as you might laugh, but I actually used it, sometimes I joke with the candidates and the new Canadians, I say, that's why we line up at Tim Hortons, because we believe in order and good governance.
This is true. I'm a huge fan of Tim Hortons. I always need my Tim Hortons coffee every morning. But Mr. Wong, with your expertise and your knowledge, what is the best advice that you can provide to those who are interested in perhaps pursuing a career in immigration and citizenship services?
There are lots of ways to help. You can help from the receiving of new immigrants, and you know, there's language skills that need to be taught. There's social services that need to be provided. There's also looking after and teaching children of new immigrants. That's important. There, more specifically to your question, there are some people who would like to help immigrants. One, to make sure that they come in properly as immigrants, or if they're refugees, to go through the difficult process of being registered as a refugee. And it is a complex legal problem. They're consultants, and they're people who practice immigration law. And one way, of course, is the legal side, where you could work as an immigrant consultant or as an immigrant lawyer. And you need to help people to navigate the very difficult application process and approval process. Sometimes we make our regulations so heavy that new immigrants have a hard time, you know. So there are many ways of helping out. You can go to law, or you can go to social work, or social services, and you can help that way.
Mr. Wong, with your expertise and your knowledge, what is the best advice that you can provide to those who are interested in pursuing a career with Immigration and Citizenship Canada?
There are many ways you can help out in this file. From the time when an immigrant or a refugee first comes to Canada, they need a lot of social services and a lot of support, from language classes, to helping children adapt, and you also have families that come from war-torn countries, so they need support that way. So there are a lot of grassroots organizations that can help in that. You can also help in the other end of the spectrum, where as an immigrant consultant or an immigration lawyer, you're helping the client navigate the complex system of first becoming an immigrant or refugee, and then becoming a Canadian citizen. So there's different ways. Depending on which way you want to go, you might have to take a law degree, or you become a social worker that way. Now, another way that you can help, I think, and I salute them a lot, are the public servants. Sometimes we forget what our public servants do. And they actually work very hard with each file. Let me give you an idea. Canada grants over 240,000 new citizens per year.
Yes.
All those files have to be gone through and vetted and reviewed and questioned. And that's the role of a public servant. So you can also work for the government that way.
And I want to mention that in terms of my background, mm-hmm. I completed a bachelor's degree in legal studies at the University of Waterloo, followed by completing a master's in public service as well. Right now, I'm currently completing my law degree through University of London's international program. And I have to say that obtaining a strong knowledge as to how our government works and obtaining that knowledge as a result of completing my master's degree has allowed me to understand the operation of a government. And there's so many different roles and responsibilities that are fundamentally crucial to, you know, assisting people, civil service, understanding the significance and impact of civil service is crucial, especially when you're dealing with people. And I strongly feel that any student that's pursuing law, should enjoy helping people. You should understand that, you know, it is a complicated process and you will be presented with complex issues, as you know. So for the students out there who are perhaps considering applying to law school or pursuing the field of law, what is the best advice that you can give to those students?
Well, the study of law is actually a very rich study, and I find that people who truly study law, who go into law school with the quest to learn more about law, end up studying who they are and study of how they think. I think the study of law is really the study of logic and analysis. In a lot of my cases when I do hearings, and I hasten to add, I'm not a lawyer, so I didn't have the privilege of going to law school. But what I've found in reading jurisprudence and reading decisions and reading about cases is that what law is about thinking. How do you resolve this complex issue by reason and logic? And I find that fascinating, and I find that very rich. So if you truly want to study law, I really encourage it. And it's really a study about logic. And that's what makes it so brilliant and so beautiful.
Certainly. And Mr. Wong, I wanted to also mention that with all of your expertise and your experience, you are also a trusted public affairs and strategic communications advisor with a specialty in strategic communications, issues management, crisis communications, media relations, and stakeholder relationships. Please discuss some of the skills that are required in order to succeed as a public affairs and strategic communications advisor.
As a public affairs strategic communications advisor, I think the first and foremost thing that you need to have is you need to really like people.
Yes.
You really need to want to know how people think, how they act. A lot of times as a public affairs advisor or strategic communications advisor, you're called in when there's a crisis. A lot of times a crisis is caused by human behavior. So for you to come in, I found that it was fascinating for me because I have to find out why did it happen and why did they do what they did. That way then I can give you my best advice. So one of the first questions I always come in on when I get called into crisis or crises is to say, not only what happened here, but what was the thought process leading up to the crisis? And that then helps me to explain to the public what had happened. I found that when I did my work, what I liked about it is that each crisis, each day was different. Now, I also hasten to add that for anybody out there who was thinking of doing the same thing, that I would tell anyone, and in any class that I teach, is that as a public affairs advisor, you're only as good as your last advice. Your next advice is a whole different process. And so it's not a job or a career where you can rest on your laurels.
This is true. I have to say that as the program editor of Global Horizons here at the NATO Association of Canada, I've been provided with many opportunities to work closely with the president of the NATO Association of Canada, Julie Lindhout, and the corporate development officer, Mr. Robert Baines, who have provided an immense amount of mentorship. And I've been fortunate enough to collaborate with my fellow colleagues here who are also junior research fellows and program editors. And one of the most crucial things when it comes down to, you know, working on team projects is having the ability to effectively communicate. And that's when having strong communication skills comes into play. I've had the privilege of working on many conferences, roundtables, and events. And it's the team that makes the event a success.
I should thank you for saying all that, because you see, I'm a strong believer in the North Atlantic Alliance. It's something that's very unique in the world. It's very unique in the history of civilization, humankind. I think NAC is more relevant today than ever before, given the situation around the world. I admire the work that's done here, especially in Toronto, because you are speaking of a message that is forgotten by the rest of Canada, and it's not really thought of by the rest of Canada, because fortunately, and we're blessed with the fact that we never had been under a lot of threat until recently. Having said that, the discussion that comes out of here, of NAC, is actually very important. And and I agree with you, the people who work here are dedicated. The young interns that come through here are wonderful. And the work that you do is not just to fulfill a university paper. I'm hoping that you walk out of here with a better understanding of how the world works and how decisions at global institutions are made.